Our next case is Apple versus MPH Technologies, 2021-1355. Good morning, Mr. Matsui. We're ready when you are.
May it please the court, Brian Matsui for Apple. I would like to address two issues. First, I would like to address the board's claim construction that a request message being encrypted requires the outer header of the message, including the source and destination addresses, to be encrypted. Second, I would like to address the board's misreading of this court's precedent when it refused to address Apple's ground with respect to claims 6 to 8 of the 581 patent. So turning first to the request message being encrypted, the board made a straightforward claim construction error. A request message being encrypted by IPsec protocols always has an outer header that is always unencrypted with source and destination addresses that are always sent in the clear.
Is the term request message a term of art?
No, Your Honor, it's not.
So I spent hours on this case, and I kind of understand your arguments. I kind of understand the other side arguments. But I don't see, it seems like the dispute between you all is not really on what part of this transmission has to be encrypted or not. It's what the message, what message actually means in this context. And believe me, I don't understand the technology fully here, but it and so both sides can correct me if I'm wrong, but I understand your argument to be that any type of transmission is going to have at least some address information to get it to the right place, and that's not going to be encrypted. The message that this is referring to could be something different than that, though, right?
So, Your Honor, just to sort of unpack that a little bit, yes, any sort of message that is sent through IPsec protocols is going to have an unencrypted outer header that has source and destination addresses that are in the clear. That's undisputed. That's common ground between the parties. It's clear on the patents, and both experts agree on that. As far as what the request message requires.
Can I just stop you there? Is it possible that the board saw those outside, I know you want to keep referring them to as headers, maybe that's because it's a term of art. I want to call it address because that's easier for me to understand.
Certainly.
And I think part of the problem is that maybe some of the information that's typically in a header could also be part of a message, which seems to me part of the dispute here. But is it possible that the board understood this to be a distinction between what the message is and those outer address issues?
I don't think so, Your Honor, because
let me give you an example.
Certainly.
I hate to be so like analog about this, but this is how it helped me to think about it. Think about a letter and the message. Think about the message being the letter inside the envelope. And if you want to get it to the right person, you have to put an address on it. And if you want to send something to this person and say, I've moved, here's my new address, there's two ways of doing it. You could just put the return address on the outside of the envelope, or you could not put the return address on the outside of the envelope because you don't want the whole world to know where you live and only put it on the inside of the envelope. And in that case, the message includes the instructions, here is where I am now, which I think is what the cell phone's trying to do, right? But it's not part of the what seems to me the address or the headers. Tell me why that's not what the board was doing here, which was saying the internal message that has the information of, that this tower needs to know where the cell phone is all encrypted, even if there's some unencrypted outside part that has to get that message to the tower.
So one problem with that hypothetical, Your Honor, which I think which sort of hits on the point, is that when you're talking about IPsec protocols, you're always going to have on that outer envelope the return address. It's always going to be there. You're going to have both the address where it's supposed to go, and you're going to have the return address that are always there. And so in that sense, whenever you're talking about a request message being encrypted, it's always going to have that source and destination address that are sent in the clear. And so the board's claim construction, which was basically saying a request message can't be a portion that's encrypted and a portion that's unencrypted, is always going to be that way when you're talking about IPsec protocols.
Doesn't that depend on how you define message?
I don't think it does, Your Honor. First of all, request message.
I'm not sure this actually works against you, by the way. It seems to me the part of the problem I'm having in this case is I don't understand what the board meant when it was using the term message in looking at the prior art. So it's hard for me to determine whether there's substantial evidence to support the board's conclusion that the prior art does it, because I don't understand what it meant to refer to as a message, whether it's this internal thing without the headers or it's the whole thing.
Well, I think the board clearly found, as a matter of fact, that Ishiyama discloses a request message. It found that it discloses a request message using IPsec protocols. It said that, and there's substantial evidence that supports that finding, and that supports us. That was an issue that Apple won before the board. And it was only because...
Yeah, I get it. So here's one last question, and I'll let you go on. But what I'm struggling with is I get your argument that under IPsec protocols, you have to have this header that has this information for it to be transmitted. That's just the way. It won't work without that. And if the board's construction is that entire thing has to be encrypted, is that even possible? I think your position is it's not possible.
Yes, it's not possible because you're always going to have an outer header that's unencrypted.
I mean, would we presume that the board, who presumably at least some of those APJs were more technically sophisticated than I am, would come up with a meaning that just didn't work?
I think that in the context of this case, yes, that's exactly what happened here. Because when you look at...
Well, if that's the construction, then nobody does it, do they?
No, that's precisely the problem.
The construction is valid, nobody can possibly infringe it because it doesn't work.
I mean...
I know you want to get rid of it now and not have to deal with it in litigation, but if the board's claim construction really means that the entire thing, including the headers, have to be encrypted, then who cares? Because nobody can actually infringe something that's not going to work in the real world.
I think Your Honor, I understand your point, but I still think that we're talking about here whether or not these claims are patentable.
Counsel, you said you had two issues to raise. Do you want to get to the second one?
Well, if I could just spend a couple more seconds on this issue, if you didn't mind, Your Honor, just because I wanted to make clear that when we're talking about these claims, they make very clear that they're talking about IPsec protocols. You know, Claim 1 specifically recites in it that it's IPsec protocols.
Isn't part of your support really in column 3 and the board really relies on column 10? Isn't that what helps support of your construction in particular?
Yes, Your Honor. I think that, you know, column 3 discusses IPsec protocols.
Yes.
And, you know, MPH's expert also discussed column 3. And when you're talking about, say, line 55, it's talking about an IPsec tunnel mode. It says this packet, which would be the message, is now routed to other host firewall with intermediate routers examining only the outer IP header. And so these intermediate routers are, of course, examining the letter, the address that it's addressed to, and then the return address. And so that is always going to be unencrypted. You're always going to have an unencrypted outer header, and that's made clear by the specification. I'd also just point the court to Appendix 2258 to 2259, where MPH's expert said you're always going to have this outer header in both tunnel mode and transport mode where it's sent in the clear. And at Appendix...
Can your construction all be supported just by the intrinsic evidence? Do we need any extrinsic evidence?
I think that it can purely be supported by column 3 right there, what you're talking about, because it's talking about, you know, these intermediate routers that are examining the source and the destination address. And so any message that's sent through the Security Association is going to be only a portion of it's going to be encrypted under the board's construction, which it just shows why the board's construction is erroneous. But I think that persons of ordinary skill in the art, I mean, this was common ground among the parties and the experts where they basically put forth detailed declarations talking about IPsec protocol that made clear that you're going to have this unencrypted outer header. And it's unfortunate. The board just didn't get it. And I think that that's why this claim construction ended up being dispositive, even though the board found that Ishiyama discloses a request message that has an inner packet that matters because that has the source of the home address that allows the other host to know, hey, this is actually the mobile computer that moved, and to update then the security association. Now, Judge Loria, I'd be happy to turn to the second issue that I wanted to reach with respect to the 581 patent and claims 6 to 8. I think the board's decision here should at least be vacated so that it can decide the issue that Apple actually raised in its petition.
The problem is your client's pleading.
No, Your Honor. I think that, first of all, the board misread this court's precedent in the Conning-Flink case to basically say that you have to repeat everything that goes to the dependent claim, that went to the parent claims when you're making a challenge to the dependent claims. Nothing in the Patent Act requires you to do that. I mean, Section 312 of the Patent Act just states the requirements for the petition itself. It doesn't state the requirements for grounds to be decided. It's just saying the requirements for a petition to be instituted.
But with the way that the grounds were written, are you essentially avoiding some of the motivation to combine arguments by the way that it was written?
No, Your Honor, we're not at all. I think that when you look at the structure of the petition, any time that there's a new reference that's put in, if you talk about Claim 5, for example, in the 581 patent, there's a discussion of motivation to combine with respect to those three references. And with respect to claims 6 to 8, it's discussing the motivation to combine with respect to the two references that are talking about that unique limitation.
Wait, are you saying that in the discussion of claims 6 through 8, it talks about the motivation to combine the additional references with the Ahonen reference?
No, Your Honor. With respect to Claim 5...
Well, that would sure help you, because then it would make clear that you intended all references. I mean, it seems pretty... I know the board's being overly technical here, but you're supposed to lay out your grounds for obviousness for each claim, you know, separately, or at least in groupings, and for Claims 6 through 8, you didn't include Ahonen.
So, Your Honor, there's nothing in the requirements of the statute that say that you have to do that. The ground here is attacking the unique limitation of Claim 6.
But you at least have to tell the board that you're relying on Ahonen in some sense. I mean, if you had had a table and just added in these two references, at least if you, in the text, you had said, for the dependent claims, everything for 5 plus these two, but none of that's in the text. All you do is talk about those two references and why they show the claims.
Yes, when you look at the structure of the petition...
Let me just ask one more question. No, you weren't interrupting, but I just want to make clear. If you just take your petition on its face for the parts that address 6 through 8, your discussion and your references don't disclose all the elements. Is that right?
If we just talk about the specific part of 6 to 8, yes, yeah. it's only addressing the unique limitation, which is what this court's precedent like Ormco and MaxLinear are basically saying you're supposed to do. Once you have a parent claim that's been held unpatentable or invalid, then it has to be the unique limitation of the dependent claim in order to uphold its patentability. And that's precisely what we did with respect to Claim 6. If there are no further questions.
I do have one question.
Certainly.
Do we need to find an APA violation? There was some discussion of that in the briefing. I just wanted you to address that.
This is on the first issue, the claim. No, Your Honor. I mean, I think that the court can reverse outright, given the fact that once you set aside the erroneous claim construction, it's basically undisputed, given the fact that the board found that Ishiyama disclosed the request message. So there doesn't need to be a finding of an APA violation. I think that what it shows, what our brief show, though, is that this claim construction issue basically came up at the oral hearing because the parties were completely disputing something different, whether or not Ishiyama disclosed a request message, whether or not it was just the outer header or whether or not it was the entire transmission, as the board found, as Apple asked it to.
Thank you, Mr. Matsui. We'll give you 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Hahn.
May it please the court. Brian Hahn for Apelli, patent owner, MPH Technologies. Here with me is Jim Carmichael, co-counsel for MPH. During Apple's argument, we touched on a very important issue here, and that's the encrypted request message. And I think Judge Hughes made a very good point that a request message is not a term of art here. So I think what's important is we look very very closely at the claims and what the claims
say. If it's not a term of art, why didn't you all ask the board to specifically construe it? I mean, it's really problematic to me that we don't have a definition of what it is to determine whether it's disclosed in the prior art or not and determine whether there's substantial evidence for that. And it does seem to me that now the two of you are arguing over what it means.
Well, I think there's a very good reason that the parties did not ask for claim construction on this, and that's because we think that the plain language of the claims actually answers this question, and I'll tell you why. If we look at the 810 patent in column 10, let's first look, before we get to the real element in question, the first time request message appears is in element C.
Can you give me a page number?
Sure. This is appendix 138. And at line 60, it states, mobile terminal sending a request message to the address of the security gateway to request the security gateway to change the secure connection to be defined between the second address and the address of the security gateway. So before we get to the encrypted part here, this is where the request message first appears. And what's important here is that you can see from the plain language of the claim that what is a request message is something that actually requests a change of an address. So there's really only two requirements for a request message that are important to this appeal. The first one, which is very important, is this one. The request actually requests the change. It has to change the address definition. So then we get to the last element of the claim on appendix page 139, and it says the request message is encrypted. That was Apple's assertion. There's actually various alternatives here. A request message could be encrypted or authenticated. You could have a reply message. But they chose to assert only or rely only on an encrypted request message, supposedly in the Ishiyama reference. So you start with, well, the request message actually has to request the change. And whatever that structure is that actually requests the change, that structure must be encrypted. And then,
doesn't the language go on to say encrypted by using the same SA already established? And then previously there it says SA using IPsec protocols. I just want to make sure you're in the full context.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And so does that also then take us to that column 3 that I was discussing with opposing counsel?
Well, yes, Your Honor. Column 3 certainly discusses the background of IPsec and generally what those protocols are. So it describes, you know, some of what we talked about, that many times in IP communications you have unencrypted outer headers, but you have encrypted portions, packets, encrypted portion of the packet. But there are two key admissions here from Apple that really cut through all of this. The first one is that the outer packet, or the outer header of Ishiyama's packet, is what actually requests the change. That's that first element I was talking about in the claims. This is at the hearing twice they admitted this, appendix page 747, lines 11 through 12, and appendix page 781 through 782. So they admitted that outer header, that's actually what requests the change. So that's that first element in the claim. And the second key admission from Apple is that outer header is not encrypted. And this is at appendix page 740 and appendix page 742. And these two admissions alone are fatal to Apple's entire appeal on the encrypted request message claims, because what actually requests the change in the address must be encrypted according to the claims. And what?
So I understand what you're saying, and that seems to be a reasonable, you know, construction of the patent, but I'm not sure that was the definition the board was using, that the request message was the information required to request the change in location. Can you point to me anywhere in the board's decision that it's clear that's the definition they were using? Because it sure seemed to me like they were using a much broader definition, which was the entire thing had to be encrypted.
No, I think that's what Apple is asserting. And in fact, Apple is asserting that the board construed the claim, but the board...
Well, that's what also the questions from the APJ that asked them seems to suggest to me. You know, that's what's problematic here. And I'm not blaming you all for not requesting a claim construction at the outset, but when it became clear the board seemed to have a different understanding of it from both of you, why you all didn't ask for a claim construction is beyond me. I mean, your definition seems like it could potentially be right. I'm sure we're going to hear from Apple on rebuttal why it's not. But I don't know that that's the definition that the board applied here. What's evidence in their decision does it suggest that that's the definition they applied?
I think if we look at the board's decision, appendix page 20, the board recognized that the plain words of the claim state that the request message is encrypted. And I think the board...
That's not good enough, though, because the problem is not whether it has to be encrypted or not. It's what it is. You've come up here and I think given me at least a logical definition. I don't know if it's correct or not because of how it intersects with IPsec protocols, which adds a technological complication on top. But, you know, to the extent you're saying the request message is the information needed to request the change in location and that all of that has to be encrypted, that's fine. But where did the board say anything remotely similar to that? They just keep repeating that the request message has to be encrypted without defining what request message is.
Well, I think, I mean, the board, the parties didn't ask them to, and I think if they aptly noted, you asked where did they discuss this, and I think at appendix page 22 in the 810 decision, the board says, well, they're responding to petitioner to Apple's argument that, you know, the outer header can't be encrypted, and they say, well, even if we consider this argument, petitioner conflates a request message that includes its unencrypted outer packet as part of the request, which is what Apple has asserted here, with a request message that does not, i.e. a request message that's contained wholly within the encrypted packet. And if you look at the patent, that's what's actually taught here. There's something called a registration request. The specification refers to it as an abbreviated form, the RREQ. The spec repeatedly talks about the request message being protected. And so,
would you concede that a packet with unencrypted address information could not infringe the claims?
With an unencrypted outer packet? Would we concede that?
Yes.
No, Your Honor. I think as we recognize, I don't think it's an evidence that necessarily every IP communication has unencrypted outer headers, but I think many times they do. But what we're talking about here is the request message being encrypted, and the specification talks specifically about that being a registration request. That is a term of art that's known in mobile IP, although the claims are not limited to that. But I think a person of skill understands that this goes in the encrypted portion of the packet. And so... the claim doesn't
speak. You're saying the request message is a registration request?
That's one embodiment that's talked about in the specification.
What is a registration request contain?
It's described in the specification. It's not limited specifically, but if I could direct the court's attention here to... column 7, line 43, the signaling mechanism is preferably similar to the one in mobile IP, a registration request, RREQ, and it goes on from there. And if, you know, we look at the top of column 7, it starts this discussion by saying that the request and a reply message can be protected, i.e. by IPsec encryption and or authentication. So, again, it's clear that the request itself is actually protected, and it's clear that Ishiyama's request, which focuses primarily on the outer header because that's actually what changes the address definition, this is unencrypted.
Counsel, do you want to get to the pleading issue?
Yes, Your Honor.
And do you think the board was unduly technical?
I do, Your Honor. I think the board... I'm sorry, was the board?
Was the board unduly technical?
No, Your Honor.
Your answer surprised me.
Sorry, I misspoke. Apple's appeal fails on claims 6 through 8 because the board correctly found that the grounds Apple raised failed to address intervening claim 5. And this is not a mere technicality. This is not form over substance. This is a statutory requirement. And the requirement is very clear that under Section 312 that you have to identify the claims. You have to identify each ground for each claim, and you have to identify each piece of evidence for those claims. And we talked a little bit during Apple's opening argument about the actual substance of their briefing. And if I could direct your attention to appendix pages 3273 and 3274, this is Apple's petition, and it starts its analysis for ground one. It asserts that Ishiyama discloses each and every limitation for claims 6 through 7, except for the security gateway limitation on which it relies for Murakawa. So it's clear that that Apple was only relying on Ishiyama and Murakawa for those claims. It was not, this was no mistake in just a heading or something. This was actually the actual substance of the brief.
Well, what happens when you get down to claim 5, though? Don't those claims depend from claim 5?
Those claims do depend from claim 5.
Well, what did they say about claim 5?
Ironically, claim 5 in the petition actually follows claim 6 through 7. So Apple hadn't even gotten to claim 5 yet by the time that it had made all of its argument. And
I mean, stopped. They wrote a bad petition. There's no doubt about that. And whether we save them or not is a different question. But I'm just curious, what did the board say? Did the board say anything specifically about any of this when it instituted the IPR? I guess what I'm asking is, if the board looked at this and said, well, they didn't say it explicitly, but we understand because they proposed a Honan under Claim 5 and 6 through 8 are dependent on that, they must have meant to include a Honan. Could they have done that and read it as sufficiently proposing that as a ground?
I don't believe that was the dependent claims, including these claims, in my recollection, Your Honor, were discussed extremely briefly in
right.
the institution.
I assume if they had evidence that showed the board understood that they included a Honan, they would be telling us that. Do you think if that had happened, that would be legal error on the board's part?
For purposes of institution, I mean, they're looking at things from a high level, and they say there's enough arguments raised here that, that we can institute the claims. But
no, but I mean more specifically, if they looked at this faulty pleading and said, even though Apple didn't repeat a Honan for 6 to 8, it's clear because it's dependent that they must have meant to include that, and therefore we institute under a Honan and the other references. Would that have been legal error? Or because you would have been given notice that they would have looked at this combination, it would have been improper to institute?
I think that would have been legal error. I mean, we cited cases like the Conoclea Phillips and Serono Dental case in the briefing, and they're very clear that the board may not institute or decide grounds that aren't raised, specifically raised
but,
in the petition.
But that's assuming they're not raised. If the board reads this petition and says the inference here is that they are raised, can they do that? It's okay. They didn't really do that here, so it's not a question you have to answer.
I think it's telling, Your Honor, that the board went on to actually analyze the grounds that were raised because Apple argued as an alternative that even without the Honan reference and Claim 5, well, Ishiyama and Murakawa together have this reply message in Claim 5. We really don't need it, judges. Well, and so the APJs actually went ahead and analyzed those pieces of prior art for those claims and found that they were insufficient. And tellingly, Apple is not challenging those analyses for claims 6, 7, or 8. They're only challenging this so-called error with respect to the intervening claim 5.
Counsel, do you agree that if a registration request had unencrypted address information, that cannot meet an encrypted request message? Do you agree with that statement?
No, Your Honor, because I think the encrypted request message, as the board even noted, that Apple failed to account for where the request message, what's actually requesting the change, is in the encrypted part of the packet. And so thus it could then have unencrypted outer headers. And this is true either for transport mode or tunnel mode. I see that I'm out of time. If there's no other questions, I'll take a seat.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. Matsu, you have 2 minutes for rebuttal. Maybe even 2:02.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to turn briefly to the first claim construction issue. On request message, there are only three things that are at all clear that a request message requires from this patent. One, that it basically has to, after the request message goes through, that there has to then be a change in the address of the security association. It has to be encrypted, and it has to be encrypted by IPsec protocols. That's all that we know about this very generic term. I call them 3-7 line 10. They basically say request is used in a generic sense. When you're looking at what we said at oral argument before the board at Appendix 747, we made clear that the bottom line is that the entire package is the request message, and that's clearly what the board held at Appendix 18 as well. At column 7, which my friend referenced, if you look there at line 56, it's saying that this request message appears to come from the wrong address, which is showing that basically it's coming from, the outer header is basically saying it's coming from the wrong address. It has unexpected address information, and then it uses the request message to update it. And Ishiyama appendix at Appendix 1259 at column 6 explains what this encapsulated packet does, the encrypted part. It has the original home address of the mobile computer, and so that was basically what tells, and that's encrypted, and that basically tells the other computer, hey, you can update the address here because this is the trusted computer that was moving. So, you know, given all that, you basically have claims that require IPsec protocols, and that's exactly what Ishiyama discloses. And then just lastly on claims 6 to 8, it's very clear from institution what our petition was arguing here. And the only way to read the petition is that each of these arguments went to the individual limitations that we had. If there are no further questions, we would ask the court to reverse.
Thank you, counsel. The case is submitted.